Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking. I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish. Publicize your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
Hi, welcome to New Books Network. I'm your host for today for this interview, Laura Goldberg. You might also know me from VittlesVamp.com, the food blog. I am very excited today to introduce everyone who is listening today to Susan Gravely. And she is the founder, and I'm going to try and get the name correctly, of Vietri, which is actually one of, no, it actually is, I should correct myself before it even comes out of my mouth, the biggest ceramic importer from Italy in the U.S. And she is a known expert in hospitality. And she has a new book called Italy on a Plate. Welcome, Susan. I'm really glad to have you here.
Laura, I am so glad to be with you. Thanks for inviting me.
Absolutely. And you know, before we got on the actual interview, we were talking about the fact that I was just in Italy and we were sharing all sorts of wonderful stories about what we love about being in Italy. But before we go there, I need to ask you, because obviously this is the New Books Network, what made you decide to write this book? Because, I mean, obviously you've got a very successful business. What made you suddenly stop in your tracks and say, you know, now I need to write a book?
I know, it's amazing. Well, you know, I'd written five children's books, small children's books based around a dinnerware pattern that we do called Old Saint Nick. And he's an Italian Old Saint Nick. And a lot of the morals of the story are based around Italian thoughts and the world and our world. So I was comfortable with the process, but this was really different. This year is our 40th anniversary, 40 years of doing this.
You're talking about the business.
Yeah, 40 years of Vietri business. And I had been asked many times to write either a business book, a women entrepreneurial book, but also about our story and about food, of course, because you and I know that Italy is Italy, and one of the main parts of Italy is being around a table, the metaphor of being together, enjoying each other, whether it's walking down the streets of Via Condotti in Rome or being around a table and eating. So I started thinking about it, and I thought, well, this is the perfect year to do it. And that was the beginning.
And what, you know, obviously there are so many components in writing a book. It's not just
right.
Sitting down in front of the computer and writing. Was there anything during the process that really surprised you in a good way or a bad way?
Well, my part, of course, was creating the outline of the people or places that had influenced me the most during these 40 years and influenced me creatively, learning about how to run a business that were so culturally entwined into their world that was also exciting for me. So that was the first, and there were lots and lots of options. The writing just was easier than I ever dreamed it would be, because it brought back so many fun memories and funny or sad or happy or challenging opportunities throughout these years. The part that was amazing of putting a book together was going and taking photographs at people's homes, getting a real feel for them, and then enjoying talking about their family recipes and bringing those into each chapter. So I didn't have anything really hard. The biggest difficulty was choosing the stories, choosing the memories, and cutting it down.
Okay, well, interesting you say that, because in reading the book, and I just want to say to listeners, in many ways, this book is about the story of the creation of your company and the people that have played a key role. I mean, it is a cookbook as well, but it's many things. And there is one character that you mentioned from the very beginning, and I would love you to tell listeners a bit about him, but he doesn't have any recipes in the book. Fabio Puccinelli.
Fabio was a miracle, as there were many of those during these years. But when we, the first trip came, when we started thinking about starting a company,
to the listeners who the we is.
We is my mother, Lee Gravely, my sister, Frances Gravely, and myself. My father was in a family-owned tobacco company that was importing and exporting the burley part, the sweet part of tobacco, all over the world. And so we grew up with lots of foreigners in our home. So as a child, it was listening to stories and, you know, if I didn't say anything and I served their drinks and brought in a tray of the cigarettes for them to flavor, I could sit and listen, and I could sit at the table and eat with them. And I was mesmerized all my life. So Mama had saved a Bon Appetit or Gourmet, I think it was Gourmet, article about the Amalfi Coast in a hotel called Il San Pietro that was a 1975 article. And in 1980, Daddy sold our three-generation family business, and they were planning to go to Italy. And sadly, he had a heart attack and died at 60. So 2 years later, Mama called me. I was in New York. My sister was in Chapel Hill having her second baby. And she said, I want to take the trip that your father and I planned. Would you go with me? Well, all her life, if she invited us somewhere, we stopped everything, because her mantra was, if you don't travel better than you live at home, then don't travel. So Frances, my sister, who was kind of more adventuresome than I, 3 years older than I was, wanted to fly Alitalia because it was Italian. And we, she just wanted the whole adventure to be Italian. So off we went. And when she needed to use the ladies' room, she walked up to first class, because those were the days when you could do that. And when she was waiting, this gentleman named Fabio Puccinelli started talking with her, and she was telling about our trip and what we were doing. So a bit later, he walked back, because we were not in first class, to meet the mother and two daughters. He gave us his card. He said, when you are in Florence, please give me a call. And I suspect we told him the weekend we would be there. So we went to first, we thanked him never to call him. But we went to Rome, tried the first restaurant that, right now I can't remember the name, but it was in Via del Popolo in Rome, loved it, went down to the Amalfi Coast, had this experience of thinking about starting a company, which I will tell you about, and then went to Florence. And the first day in 1983, Mama had all the traveler's checks and all the cash and all three passports in her pocketbook. as we walked around and dreamed about where we were and talked about our father, and Mama wanted to buy us a gift. She always loved to buy something on a trip. Well, we didn't know what it was, went to a restaurant, drank wine, toasted Daddy, toasted our great fortune, walked up and had our first fight, which was Mama wanted to get a taxi and Francis and I wanted to walk back to the Excelsior on this moonlit evening. Well, Mama lost. We walked down this dark little road on our way and a motorcyclist, two of them, came by, pushed Mama, grabbed her pocketbook, and not only was she bruised, but her whole self-value was bruised, that she had fallen down and we had lost everything. So off to the police station we went, and you can really understand this, Laura. The policeman went from, you know, very formal to unbuttoning their shirts by two buttons and trying to speak English with us. They were adorable.
How old were you and what year was this?
I mean, this was 1983.
Yeah, no, this was a very different era.
Not that
Italian men have changed all that much.
No, they've not.
You were young. Southern women,
right?
The young Southern belles, and so these gentlemen definitely wanted to, shall we say, flirt.
Flirt. That's right. Well, they flirted. We got nowhere with the passports or the money. So the next morning, Mama said, "Remember that nice man who spoke to us on the plane? We need to find somebody to help us." So Francis, where I had his card, we called, and he was in Florence, which he was never in Florence because he was a big fisherman. He picked us up, helped us get passports, said, "I will lend you money," gave us money. And then that afternoon said, Mama, where do you want to go? And she said, "I want to go see the Leaning Tower of Pisa." So off we went to Pisa.
He is quite the white knight, my goodness.
All was the white knight. During that time, we told him about these plates, what we wanted to do. After dinner, suddenly we were at this beautiful villa of Tita Bozio, which is the first chapter in the book.
Right. He's the one who has the jewelry store, correct? But what could you explain to us exactly what your idea was before you started the company, so they have a little insight as to what you were so excited about and spoke to Fabio about?
Yes, exactly. They understood, because Tita had a beautiful, beautiful little store, the smallest store in all of Florence, and also had a booth in Trompi, which is the marketplace. She also worked at Macy's Corporation. So here we are, knocking on her door, going in, being introduced, and Fabio saying, tell her. And she said, "Beautiful designs, wonderful product, the hardest people in Italy to work with." And after that, Francis and I thought, well, we're Southern, we're persistent, we're going to give a try. And Fabio said after that trip, "If you get serious about it, call me and I will pick you up and take you to help negotiate."
But the idea of the business was, can you just explain that?
The idea of the business was designing and importing Italian handcrafted products, thinking it would only be dinnerware and garden accessories, but it grew into mouth-blown glass, handmade straw objects, garden big accessories, home accessories, linens. It grew into the whole essence of Italian handcrafts in the better market.
Got it. And I know from the book that your very first client was Neiman Marcus, if I'm not incorrect.
That is correct. We went back in September. Fabio met us, helped us negotiate our first 25,000 pieces that were coming. We went back and I found out about the New York Tabletop Show. Totally sold out. I called the gentleman, Mr. Wolf, who headed up the tabletop temporary spaces, begged him and told him I was in New York and could I just show him my ware? I was not in New York. I flew up the next morning, showed him my 12 pieces, and he said, if you can make the column next to the registration desk look fabulous, I'll give you this 6 by 6 foot space for $300 and you're in. That's what we did. We called our friends. We borrowed tables. We rented a chest and set it up. And Mama and I stood there, and Cynthia Marcus and a wonderful colleague of hers came in and they sat down. That was those were the days when you'd sit down and write an order, and they wrote a $12,000 order, which was $12 million to us. And we made sure after we received our container in March that the very next day we packed up their order and sent it to them. And they've been an account of ours for 40 years.
It's an incredible story. And I will say, as a woman, and I'm a woman who does own my own business. I was inspired by the fact that you and your sister and your mother had that. And I'm going to use the word gumption.
Right.
To decide that you were going to do this and the fortitude to make it such an incredible success. I'm curious, are there other female entrepreneurs that have inspired you? Obviously, you know, you mentioned Tita, but who else? Like, is there anybody, even somebody you haven't met that you've really admired that have inspired you as in this journey and inspire you now to look at the next generation?
Yeah, I would say absolutely. I mean, I was always encouraged as a young girl, and being in an entrepreneurial family, you know, I was always the campaign manager. I always had the lemonade stands. But through my life, you know, I was mesmerized by Oprah when she came on because she had gumption and she was interesting and she was creating this aura for women. Yeah. I always read Maya Angelou, and I was lucky enough to go to a wedding and she gave the first toast and had written a poem for this couple. And I loved the way that she gracefully commanded respect, and that I just knew I didn't have to be anybody but myself, but I needed to just keep going. There was a woman named Jenny Fitch. She and her husband, RB, were great mentors of mine. They started the first Relais Chateau in Pittsburgh, which is about 18 miles from here.
I know where Pittsburgh
is. I just started, and I knew them from bigger parties, but I didn't know them well. And I was invited by them to have dinner at Farrington. And I thought, oh my, this is wonderful. I was 33 years old. It was going to be a big party, I thought. Well, I arrived, and it was just me. And we went upstairs into their large office and sat at a beautiful table. And they had, and remember, this is 1983, they had printed out sheets on leadership and on grace and respect and fairness and all the kind of ethical morals and senses of humor that they had. They just wanted to talk about starting a business. And Jenny died of cancer. RB is 88 and is still a mentor of mine.
Well, also, as a Southern woman, and you and I were talking before, I love the area you live in, Raleigh, Durham, Chapel Hill, you know, the Research Triangle. It's fantastic. And I'm just going to go on an aside right now. As you were talking about your father, I was thinking about a visit I had many years ago to the Tobacco Museum there, which is really fascinating. But as a Southern woman, I mean, Southern hospitality is legendary for a reason. And I know there's a chapter in the book that's about you and your husband and having people at your own table. And I'm somebody who loves throwing dinner parties, but I'm curious about your take, you know, in terms of an affinity between Southern hospitality and Italian hospitality and where the differences are and what you've learned from it.
Well, Laura, you know, I think I always I've always been comfortable with strangers in our home, you know, foreigners, guests in our home. And I love entertaining with different ages, different points of view, from just a party that's filled with laughter to a party where there's something going on in the world and we're discussing it. When I went to Italy, I quickly felt their innate joy of living and that they never ask you about what you do. They talk about what's in bloom. How are the grapes doing? How are the olives doing? You know this, all the flowers that are out. And you cook with fresh ingredients. And that's how we grew up. We, now, of course, in 83, you didn't have as many fresh ingredients, so you used the best canned things you could find or frozen. But there was always...
Great. I mean, canned, pickled. I mean, there's
fabulous.
Starting to recognize that just because it's in a can or in a jar doesn't mean that it isn't absolutely marvelous. But
absolutely. You're right.
Yes.
Yeah. So the one thing that was brought to mind to me that was different is that as a Southerner, you meet someone new, you immediately like them, you consider them a friend. It takes about three times of things going on that you're not kind of in sync with that you think, I'm not going to spend my time with that person.
Right.
Italians are the opposite. It takes three, five, seven times of getting to know someone, you know, having participating in either activities or business or laughter, that they will then, if you are really lucky, invite you to their home. And when you are invited to their home for a meal, that is their sign of friendship. And that's, again, where food, being together, being around this metaphor of a table, standing and having a glass of Prosecco or being at a table is so important to build relationships and make people feel accepted and loved and to leave those situations where you just feel better.
Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Get chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-eat meals, so you can go back to doing what you love this spring. Looking for gourmet meals? Try meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus. And this is the part I really like. No fuss, no mess meals. Factor meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning. You simply heat and savor the good stuff. Factor is the solution for fast, premium meals without the need for cooking. Head to factormeals.com/NBN50 and use code NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code NBN50 at factormeals.com/NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
Now, you talk in the book about a dear friend, and she also frankly does the introduction, Frances Mays.
Yes.
And being at her table. Now, she is the writer, for those who don't know, she is the writer of Under the Tuscan Sun. And you talk about visiting Bramasole, which I'm assuming is, am I pronouncing that correctly?
Correct. Perfect. In Cortona.
So yes. Since she's an American in Italy, do you feel like, I mean, I know you spend a lot of time there, but I think she lives there, but she also lives in North Carolina too.
That's exactly right. She spends 6 months in North Carolina, close to us, and 6 months in Cortona with her husband, Ed.
So is that is her table, would you say, Italian, American, or Southern, or is there something in between? And I want to ask the same about your table.
Her table is always a mix, as my table is, of different patterns of dinnerware. She always has fresh flowers. Hers is, I would say, a little more romantic than my table's, but her food is almost always Italian. She and her husband adore cooking. She loves to bake. He loves to cook pastas and sauces. And I don't know if you know it, but she has written 3 different cookbooks.
Oh, I have no idea.
Yes, Under the Tuscan Sun cookbook. She's just come out with a cookbook of pasta sauces. She and Ed went to every district in Italy and created the different flavors of those areas. And now another book's coming out in April on a pasta veloce, and it's fast pastas again. But my table is also eclectic. I believe in being as easy as possible. So I'll think about the dinnerware because, we both love dinnerware. I'll think about the dinnerware and then I'll set the table around it. Fresh flowers, most of the time in our hibiscus vases, low to the table. Fun salt and pepper shakers if it's related to a season. And then I'll use everything from Vietri linens to my mother's linens to paper soft napkins, which is this wonderful kind of spun silk, but the price of paper napkins that we sell that's paper soft, spun linen. Wow. And they come in stripes and checks and dots and wonderful kind of borders. And I'll use those because they're fun and they look like they're better paper napkins. And then I'll mix the glasses. So the food for us will be a combination usually. We'll have something like involtini di melanzane that's in the cookbook that Francis made, as a matter of fact. Ed made it. And then we'll use, we'll cook a pork tenderloin and use chutney, warm chutney, and then, an easy dessert. So I do more combinations.
Got it. I mean, I've got to say, when I'm planning dinner parties, I'm planning a few right now. I often do like 5-course dinner parties. I live in a small apartment in Brooklyn. I often have, a table of 8, and I love cooking.
Yes.
So, I felt reading the book that we were kindred spirits in that. And talking to you also about Rome and I was in Venice recently, totally enchanted by cicchetti. Have you ever done a cicchetti dinner? Because I've been thinking about doing that.
I have never done that. I think that would be very cool. Now, I want to tell you about last night, because this is an easy thing to fix, and it was divine. I started with taking French radishes.
Yep.
And melting the butter and using the top part of the butter. I can't remember what it's called. It starts with a D, but you dip it halfway in the top part of the butter and then you use sea salt. And it just is that salty, buttery, wonderful radish. And I did that as an appetizer because I wanted to do something different. And we just had Prosecco. This was my sister's 75th birthday. Only 6 people. I then made the involtini di melanzana that I was talking about that's in the book that Frances Mays makes. That I love it because it's got the eggplant, but it's also got all the spices and then with tomato, but it's got prosciutto and mozzarella inside. Very easy. You roll it. And then the easiest is I made a white fish in something called aqua pazza, white fish in crazy water.
What
the
is
reason
crazy
I
water?
Love it, yeah, it's called pesce all'acqua pazza, and it's from Positano. It's on page 85, and you cook the garlic, onion, celery, tomatoes, and pitted black olives, Kalamata olives, with olive oil, and you cook that and get it very soft. Take a huge skillet, and then you add water after it's totally cooked up to the top of this wonderful sugo, you know, sauce, and you put, we use North Carolina flounder, but you put the white fish on top, you cover it with the top and let it boil, and it's like fixing, you know, just that boiling water, a steamed fish, but it's in one pan. The fish is so moist and it looks beautiful. I use pasta bowls and put it in pasta bowls. Then I made another easiest thing, which is, because Frances and Ed were here, I made her shortbread cookies with essence of orange and sage. And that, I'm telling you, Laura, that sage with that orange, your mouth just opens up with spring.
I need to make that. I need to make it, because I make a shortbread with lemon zest, honey, and rosemary.
Yes, yes, because Frances was we were talking about the cookies, and she said, you know, she puts a lot of different things in them. And we were talking about rosemary and lemon together, because she, you know, all Italians, and you and I love lemon. But on page 161 of the book is this orange and sage, and it's just a different take on an easy, easy shortbread cookie.
Well, you know, to me, I'm with you. I try to think of the only reason I can do these big dinner parties, and it sounds to me like it's similar for you, is because you plan them in advance and you come up with recipes that are absolutely delectable, but are not that complicated. And when you've got really good ingredients, and I'm going to emphasize again, that can be canned, that can be in a jar.
Yes.
You know, and you can most definitely, you know, create something that's really special. And I embrace having people around my table, and it's so clear to me that you do too. I want to ask you though about certain, about Fabio Puccinelli.
Yes.
I'm surprised that there were no recipes from his family. Does he not cook?
I'll tell you why. He has been sick.
Oh.
And so it just wasn't the right place or moment.
Got it.
Though they are all very close friends of mine and live in Florence. And he comes from an old, old, old Florentine family. But I decided that Tita represented that same world. And that suited them because it just wasn't the right time for them. And he honestly, except for grilling fish, and he is more of a restaurant guy, though he will cook a fish in a hurry. He's a big fisherman. But that is the reason I talk about him, and he loves that in his pictures in the book. But I went to Tita.
I understand. I get it. I just was curious because, like I said earlier, he's most definitely the white knight of the story.
Yes.
And I'm so glad that you regaled him as such. And I was just curious if there was a recipe, but clearly now I want to know his favorite restaurants the next time I'm going to Florence or anywhere that he's been. But I kind of want to know the same from you. I mean, I was lucky enough to be able to go to two markets when I was in Italy recently. I went to the, in Venice, I went to their big market for fish and vegetables and was able to cook. And then it didn't have a kitchen available to me when I was in Rome, but I went to the market in Testaccio, which was amazing. And I feel like there's something to be said for the kinds of ingredients that you can get in Italy. And I mean, I'm just curious, you know, when you shop for food, because I really don't know in the research triangle, though I've been there, are there places you can go to get incredible, you know, fruit and vegetables? Are there farmers markets and such and fishmongers that you adore?
Absolutely. We have a wonderful fishmonger in Chapel Hill, and it's close to our farmers market, which is small, but North Carolina is laden with organic farms, beautiful, markets for food. And as you know, in Italy, it's the same way. The difference, and I know you know this, is in America, we can touch the food. We can touch the fruits. In Italy, they don't want you to touch the food in markets. They want to talk about it, and they pick the ones. Did you find that?
Absolutely. There were signs in English just to make sure that Americans, and I'm assuming the Brits too, you know, it said, please do not touch.
On just exactly. About
everything. They, you know, it's a very different way of shopping.
Yes.
To be able to talk. And of course, my Italian is minimal at best, unfortunately. Do you speak fluent Italian at this point?
I do. And Laura, it is wonderful with an Italian, with a Southern accent.
Are you being facetious or are you quite serious?
No, I do speak Italian and I'm joking about my accent, but because the accent is also when I speak Italian, but they love it. And I do most of their business in Italian.
And how much are you in Italy, you know, during the year? And do you have a second home there, or do you find yourself staying at friends or renting a place or going to hotels?
I do all of the above. We do not own a place there. You know, for so many years, I would be there 5 months a year, and it would be like the movie Where Are You on Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday. I was just flying around the country, discovering factories and working having my renaissance with the artisans, the craft of everything from cooking to how they create their homes to how they create different types of clays and glazes and glass blowing and weaving. And so that's what my world has been circled around. I do stay with certain Italians when I'm there. They are very close friends. I've been to, you know, everything from baptisms to being a testimonial, which is like a best lady in weddings and funerals. And then Bill and I, my husband Bill, for the past 6 years have rented an apartment in Florence. And I work all of January. And then February and March, I would be working either on the children's books that finished last year or this book. And also with technology, it's so easy to communicate at work. So, you know, I'm always working from Hillsborough, but being in Florence. So that's kind of what my life has looked like.
Well, it sounds like a pretty glorious life. I really, you know, have to say, looking at your book, I felt like, you know, can I be Susan when I grow up? Not that I'm not grown, but you know what I mean.
Well, and I will say, speaking with you, you know, if you want to use that comparison, you have a lot of Susan in you.
Well,
you're living your life, your encircling yourself with friends and new friends and hopefully family, and you're taking advantage of finding your way as an independent, happy woman. And that's really, really important for all of us.
I couldn't say it better. I feel like if you can celebrate your own life and have a fully peopled life, and I do believe being around the table is part of that, you're doing it right.
Me too. I agree with you. I think that more than ever, this is, we can share that with as many people as we can and invite them to our table, you know, all types of tables, so that we can just make sure that we don't forget about joy and a sense of humor and just relaxing.
It gets you through so much. So much.
So much.
I mean, there's no way life doesn't throw you curveballs.
Absolutely. Right.
So I just want to tell listeners again, Italy on a plate, if you want to experience a little bit of Susan's life and taste some of the wonderful things she's gotten to taste over the years and have a bit of an introduction to some of the people that have really helped her build her business and contribute to her life. And can you tell people they can get the book on Amazon, if I'm not incorrect?
Yes, that's right. Amazon.com. And it's coming out officially on the 14th of this month, which is next week. Meaning right now they will pre-order it and it'll wait. You can also go to SusanGravley.com.
All right. Well, I cannot thank you enough for taking the time today. And I look forward to maybe someday having you at my table next time you're in New York. But thank you so much. And I really hope people take the chance to read the book and experience a little bit of what you've brought to the world, both in terms of hospitality and an attitude towards business, but also taking a look at Vietri and what you can actually literally bring to someone's table.
Thank you, Laura.
Thank you so much.